59. Coming up after these messages, it's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, covering politics, history, and the state of the zeitgeist with a liberal dose of your comments.
Join K Boo by December 31st and receive free gifts and prizes from the Give Guide. Just click the donate banner on the K Boo app to keep community radio strong and vibrant in Portland and beyond.
They didn't decide how they can protect the animals or the environment or people more. Instead, they were like, well, how can we protect ourselves? And from that, they developed these protocols where prior to any large storm event, they're actually now locking all animals inside, boarding up the facilities and bolt locking them with multiple different devices so that nobody can get in and nobody can get out.
You were just listening to Elizabeth Jones, also known as Ethically Elizabeth. She's an animal rights activist, a rescuer, marine biologist, and a conservationist. You can catch this episode of Voices for the Animals on December 27th at 10 a.m. right here on KBOO, or anytime after the 27th on kboo.fm/voicesfortheanimals, also on Google Play and iTunes.
Hey, good morning. It's foggy. Foggy dew. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor, that's my partner, and I'm Joe Uris. Abe isn't here. He's getting a well-earned vacation. The number to call, this is a talk show after all, 231-8187. And here's my advice. Don't get sick. It's turning out to be much, much worse than you thought. Whether it's the flu or whatever, don't get sick. Now, there's a lot to talk about. And I think it's important. It's important that we talk about a lot of this. First of all, the onrushing reality of climate and climate change, which is totally denied by the Republican Party and the weird President of the United States, and I'll talk about him in a little bit, and I'll talk about the Republican Party as well. The onrushing dangers of climate change are being manifested everywhere. And at the same time that that is the case, the denial of that seems to be as profound easily as the event itself, which is weird to me. There are other things that really are beginning to rankle. For example, 14 states on principle, I guess, have turned down the expansion of Medicare. I don't know if you out there know this or care about this, but this is a really weird thing. By denying people health care, which is actually a real, you know, it doesn't cost anything to the states to accept it. Making sure that people don't get the care they need seems to be not only cruel, but unnecessarily cruel. And this is part of what I'm beginning to realize is a national trend on the part of what used to be a righteous conservative party known as the Republicans. But they've lost, for the most part, all their authenticity, all of their original kind of cute Republican ethos. In fact, the Republican Party of today is the party of Donald Trump, and he is the virtual commander-in-chief of all of this, and he is the most corrupt, the most degenerate, the most fascist, the most Russian agent-ish sort of president that we have ever had. And this is a crisis of such enormity that it really beggars the processes of normal government. Right now we're seeing these kind of debates with the Democrats, and the issue for the Democrats, apart from how the hell they can defeat Trump, given that he's got a lot of Russian money pouring into his coffers, and given the fact that there's lots of other money in his hands, 300 and some odd million already, I think, more than that. Given that that's all the case, how are the Democrats going to deal with this? Well, in a kind of a sloppy way. First of all, they have these debates, which until recently were really, really bad. And now there's an argument about where you can take, where you should take money from, and so on. And more important than that, there's the question of what kind of a party should the Democrats be? Should they be, and this is my bias, a social democratic party pushing for universal health care in any form? By the way, the specificity of Elizabeth Warren has probably hurt her chances to be president unfairly, but there you have it. The fact that we ought to have national health care like any other Western democracy. The general failure, in fact, of the Democratic Party to outline a progressive agenda at this point already is very scary. And that is going to be an issue going into the next few months of selecting a Democratic Party person as presidential candidate. It's really very weird, very strange. So that struggle is very important. The tendency in the Democratic Party is to pull back fearfully from anything progressive and to look toward a sort of conservative, liberalish kind of thing, a Joe Biden out of it kind of thing, you know? So we would have Joe Biden, the out of it guy, fighting it all with the fascist. That's that's a weird thing to think about, and it's still true. Meanwhile, there is going on, for sure, a war on the poor. I mean, you know, everything but guns, denying health care, denying services. And most notably and most obviously in every city in the United States, Portland is no exception, there are many, many people who are houseless. Many people. And the arguments are made, well, you know, they're junkies. No, some are. Well, you know, they're failures and blah, blah. Well, old time song there, but for fortune go I. The fact of the matter is that many of us, many of you listening, if you examine your finances, are probably $400 away from impoverishment. Many of you worry about where the next meal is coming from. Many of you are not paid $15 an hour for whatever it is you get to do, and many of you don't get to do much. So this is a real crisis. This is the crisis of our age, the crisis of the ordinary woman or man. And it's kind of like, we know it's there. What are we going to do? Gosh, these homeless people, they're messy. They don't have a pot to pee in. They, you know, it's a lousy life, and they make a mess, and they leave their needles somewhere, and they, you know, and some of them are aggressive. And obviously, people in need of help. Obviously, people in need of social services. Obviously, most importantly, people in need of houses and jobs. And these, though we can certainly afford them, do not exist. So we have a growing population in every major city, notably, for example, in Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles, San Francisco Bay Area, and so on. And this sits there and festers like an open wound, even as we are engaged in a discussion about our future as a nation. Meanwhile, and this is what really rankles me, Russia is waging war, not shoot 'em, bang, bang war, but, well, except in Ukraine, waging war against the United States and against the Western powers. I think, and have always thought, that when the Soviet Union collapsed, we should have created a buffer state solution for all of the countries that had been part of the Soviet bloc. You know, running from Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, through Poland, all the way down through Ukraine, all the way down the Eastern Front of Europe. That would have maybe helped a great deal. But in the meanwhile, a modern-day kind of fascist leader, Vladimir Putin, has taken over Russia. Russia's economy is smaller than that of Italy, really. And yet it's a huge country with vast resources, and Putin's actively fighting the United States by finding an ally in Donald Trump. And I don't know what the story is, by the way, with Donald Trump. And I could ask you that, and if you want to call me and tell me what you think. I believe, I do not know, that in some manner, because he believes in authoritarianism, Donald Trump, who, by the way, has canceled the punishments for the Navy SEAL guy and others who randomly killed, well, almost randomly killed people in our wars, because of that, because of the way in which Donald Trump loves power and loves aggression and loves fascist leadership, we are faced with a crisis unprecedented in our history. Here's a guy with no training whatsoever, never have been a successful person financially except through his family money. Here's a guy who has absolute limited intellectual ability and enormous arrogance and a deeply offended ego. And he's president of the United States, and he violates the Constitution, and he thumbs his nose at the law, and he essentially is ungovernable and is out of control. And yet, I would guess about a third, maybe as much as 40% of the active voting population of the so-called Republican Party, once a Republican Party, are going to be ending up supporting him. Meanwhile, the Democrats, as I say, are trying to decide whether to go conservative, kind of Joe Biden, blah, blah, I don't know, thing, or whether to go with a social democratic candidate. The choices there being Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. And this is a thing that is going to be jockeyed around, even as we don't have in the United States a system of paper ballots for every state. We don't, pardon me, have a modern way of counting votes. So this is all stuff that is rankling me. And I would really like to hear from people about what they think is going to be happening, what they think should happen, what they think they want to happen, in fact, what they fear might be happening. 231-8187. I know it's kind of dark. I should be having Christmas songs and talking about goodwill toward men, women, what? I don't know, but I'm really kind of weirded out about all this. I'm not a young person. I have taught and understand sociology and history. I see a pattern here that is, to me, very clear. And it is not just a drift, but a drive toward a totalitarianism in the United States, unprecedented, really unprecedented, since the quasi-liberation of African Americans after the Civil War. So here we sit. We have to acknowledge that we are a society which is prejudiced in a number of ways, which oppresses in many ways, particularly persons of color, but also women and persons whose gender politics don't fit the so-called norm. All of this is happening in the face of policies that actually, literally, are bringing about the doom of climate change. This is all real. This is not rhetoric. This is, though I talk rhetoric, this is all stuff that's actually happening. And maybe it's just a little too dark for anybody to want to contemplate, especially since it's almost Christmas. And if your neighborhood is like mine, it's all lit up with pretty lights, and it's all looking nice, and we can go down Peacock Lane, and we can go and shop and shop and shop, and we can all play on the deck of this Titanic as the ship slowly and steadily falls beneath the waters of a dark and ugly sea. So, you know, I'm a little dark-headed. Maybe you could cheer me up. I'd like calls from people who are going to tell me good things. There are good things, and I tend not to see them. I admit that. Love to hear from you if you got good things to say or things to report on. And I am quite open to interpretations or arguments about what I feel is happening. The fact that the President of the United States takes this Navy SEAL guy who was convicted in the armed forces of being a wanton killer, you know, and makes a hero of him and travels around and the crazy crowds that Trump manages to gather, really bothers me. We never had a thing like this before. We're not able as a country to perhaps comprehend exactly what's going on. But we have a leader who loves authoritarian regimes, who is an authoritarian himself, and who has had no real political experience, no time in office or anything. So he's, and he's ignorant, obviously ignorant. So here we are with this guy as our president of the United States, through a kind of accident of and miscalculation of the Democrats in 16. I'm looking at all of this, and I'm thinking, gee, this is weird. This is really, really creepy. And yet, it's real. So let's hear from you. 231-8187. Corey, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Joe.
You going to cheer me up?
No.
Darn!
No, this is a good conversation. I call you guys from Houston, Texas, every once in a while. I'll be brief. I know you're an educator. I'm still teaching. I think a lot of this boils down to our education system or lack thereof.
Uh-huh.
I hate saying this. We have some really ignorant students out there, and this is basically, I had a situation over the semester where a student plagiarized. They plagiarized the paper, and so when I confronted the student, the student lied. I didn't plagiarize. I'm like, no, it's you copied a paper from a website.
That's not plagiarism.
So, yeah, he's like, it's the Google. I'm like, look, man, you don't need a degree to Google a paper. But the thing that really sort of turned my stomach is when it went to academic affairs. They're just like, well, can you help them out? And because I'm a person of color, and the student was a student of color, it was almost like, well, you know, hey, can you hook them up? And I'm like, well, hook them up with what? Like, he cheated. And I think I'm seeing more and more of that in higher education with this sort of social promotion. You have these students that feel like. And younger people, I hate to say that, I'm almost still in my 30s. But I'm still jaded because these younger kids are feeling they deserve something for nothing. And then you have older people that they feel like they don't deserve anything. So when you tell them, I have an older student, I'm like, well, what do you think about, you know, Medicare for All? Well, that's socialism. I'm like, well, don't you think that, you know, as a human being, as an American, healthcare is a right? Well, no, it's socialism. I'm like, but you're a veteran like me, correct? He's like, yeah. Do you go to the VA? He's like, yeah. Well, isn't that socialism? That's different. So I'm just really confused right now. Just like you said, I'm confused because, you know, on one hand, people say, well, the young people are going to save us. But I think that there are a lot of young people that are really disappointing me as far as just their lack of understanding of basic things. When you come into one of my classes and you tell me that the Civil War was about states' rights, I'm like, yeah, the right to own slaves. And then I get pushback when I say that. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So I'm really confused about what's going on here. The good thing is, even though it's not a great thing, we're moving to Canada in May. So we're
excited.
We're those people that got accepted across the border. But the sad part is, I'm like, do I really have to leave my country in order to feel safe? And I think I do, because I don't have any idea what's going on. I don't have any idea, me personally, the draw of the current president. I really don't get it. I don't understand how people can be so willfully ignorant. And yeah, it's a sad state of democracy right now.
Well, listen, I'm sorry for your despair. I can understand wanting to escape, and I'm not critical of that in particular, especially for a person of color in this country at this time. I will spend a little time maybe just talking about why it is that people are so ignorant. I won't put too much energy into that because I think I want to get as many callers in today as possible. And, you know, it's Christmas time. Anyway,
gotcha.
Listen, man, you hang in there and you stay in contact, okay?
All right, you have a good Christmas,
Joe. Yeah, you too, man. Well, here is something everyone needs to understand. First of all, what most of us learned in high school and grade school about the history of the United States was an idealized version of an allegedly perfect republic, which was from its outset imperfect. I know I've talked about this before, and we all probably understand this, but it always bears repeating. The first thing to understand is that the people who founded this country, while being progressive in the context of a system of power that had kings and queens, were in fact pretty conservative. They didn't want regular people voting. That's clear with how they set things up. They didn't want the landless to vote because they thought they would be shiftless. They didn't want people of color to vote because they were racist. They didn't want women to vote because they were sexist. And I can go down a list like that. And they wanted to kill off all the indigenous people because they didn't really want to honor the United States per se. So this is the history of the beginning. Even though, as I say, in retrospect and in looking at the history of Europe, it was pretty progressive. With that burden, which we carried on through into the Civil War, and then in the Civil War time, in the time when we actually were able, through 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, to free African American people and made promises to them that would be in the neighborhood of, you know, kind of 14 acres and a mule, something, which never happened. In the context of that, we have never really righted those wrongs, and we have seen a resurgence repeatedly, beginning with the beginning of the Ku Klux Klan and the end of what is now called Black Reconstruction, Progressive Reconstruction, and the withdrawal of national troops from the South, and a corrupt deal to make sure the Republicans ended up with a presidential candidate. In the context of all of that, which created something called the Solid South, once the Democratic Party, now reversed into Republicans. In the context of all of that, we are still in a retrograde social context. And all of our history books, as far as I know, I haven't seen recent high school books, so I don't know for sure, are inaccurate in their idealistic portrayal of American history rather than realistic. That is something that needs to be corrected, and that is something that needs to both celebrate what was accomplished and point out what wasn't at the same time. And that history needs to be a complete history. Zen and others really have done a good job of tracing that history, but that's not the history that most people learn in school. So we come into the situation where a person can be an adult with a mythological belief in the United States and the purity of its politics. And at the same time, we know demographically that this country is changing, that it will, within probably even my lifetime, be predominantly a culture of certainly, obviously, women, but also of persons of color. And that, I believe, scares the hell out of a lot of people. They may not even be able to acknowledge that, but it's real, and it's a factor that I think really contributes to the success of Donald Trump. And this is real stuff, and it's really, really difficult. Now, as to the question of health care and other services that ought to be rendered based on your taxes, based on what you put into the system, based on your commitment to the nation, well, we have confounded, beginning with the attack on the left after World War II, we have confounded the notion of social democracy with the notion of Soviet style, it wasn't communism, but Soviet style totalitarianism. The reality is that all the countries of Europe, particularly the northern tier of them, are capitalist nations with both the faults and advantages of capitalism, at the same time that they provide social services, guaranteed housing, guaranteed health care, all kinds of services that are really necessary. High-speed rail, and on and on and on. Now, there's lots of problems with those nations. This is not a fantasy world. But it is obviously the case that there is no reason to have to abandon the notion of a profit-based system of economics in order to achieve a social welfare state. And the social democratic approach is a rational approach, and it should be honored. And our politics right now in the United States leave no room for that, so that Bernie Sanders, very, very popular, Elizabeth Warren, also popular, propose healthcare reform and are shot down repeatedly as being unrealistic or being crazy or being too progressive or whatever. The fact of the matter is, nothing that they are suggesting is undoable, and it would not happen necessarily exactly the way they want it to happen. But to push that as part of the platform of a single large party in America, the Democratic Party, makes real sense. And yet, that's not necessarily what's going to be going on. On the other hand, getting rid of Donald Trump, that's poor phrasing, making sure that he is not elected again, more to the point, is an absolute necessity. We are at the place where we are verging on a fascist presidency that will destroy us. And we are, for example, still at war to no particular purpose in Afghanistan. You know, it was revenge originally against the 9/11 people. But nah, what it really is an American adventure, just like the British adventure before it, just like the Soviet adventure as well, just like, by the way, way back to the time of Alexander the Great. Afghanistan has its own problems. It does need to work on its problems. We do need to be generous toward them and patient. However, the fact of the matter is, waging war in that region has gained us absolutely nothing. We've spent a lot of national treasure, by the way, that could have been used for housing, education, and health care. And so I'd like to hear from you. If you disagree with me, that's fine. I want to know what you think is up and what is to be done, as a famous communist once said. So let's go out to the phones. 231-8187. Mark, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Merry Clackamas. All right. Well, that was a lot that you had to say, and I might want to try to narrow it down to something you mentioned about getting rid of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
At least winning.
I mean by that, I want to be clear here because things are getting weird. Making sure that he's not elected president a second term.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm also hoping. Okay, so the thing that concerns me is I would like to discuss whether what you think or what other people think about whether or not Bernie Sanders could win an election with Donald Trump.
Well, that's an interesting question. Of course, the answer, the only answer will happen if it happens.
It scares me. It scares me. And I want to say that if Bernie Sanders were running against Donald Trump, I'd vote for Bernie Sanders. I would.
Uh-huh.
But it concerns me. There's a almost an intangible about Bernie. It's hard to put my finger on it, but he doesn't come off as a pleasant character in his speeches.
What do you mean? You want him to be more likable interpersonally, or what?
Well, if you take a look at Elizabeth Warren, there is something there that is not there with Bernie Sanders.
Well, to start with, she is a college professor coming out of a working class background that's somewhat different than Bernie's. And, of course, obviously, she is a woman.
Right. And I think that could, okay, you know, getting Trump out of there is still what I'm talking about. And I have a feeling that Bernie Sanders is just not going to sit well with a lot of the American voters across the country.
Uh-huh.
Okay? It's just in watching his mannerisms. All right, he seems to be angry. It's kind of, you know, edgy to listen to him speak.
Are you talking about the way he hectors, something like that? His hand gestures, what?
Hector,
that's a term for, you know, what you said doing that, you know, like that.
Well, there's something to do with strong New England accent. I mean, listen, it's not about whether or not he's right or not. It's about whether he can actually be elected.
Well, he's awfully popular with young people, ironically.
Okay. Yes. And, you know, that's about as much as I want to say about it.
Okay.
But it makes me nervous to run Bernie Sanders against
Well, him. Do you have a candidate you would prefer?
Probably Warren.
Okay, that's
because
a reasonable option.
She's saying the same thing, but you know, when it really comes down to it, I mean, you know, I don't. Well, okay, when it comes down to it, it's who do people like? It's not a. It may not be so much about their policies as much as are.
So
they
you're saying it really is a popularity contest, and we should choose, if we want to get rid of Trump as president, we should choose the person most likely to please the largest number of people, something like that?
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, it's okay. Back to one thing you said, it does seem to be a popularity contest, yes.
Sure.
And let's be realistic. I mean, I'm not saying Bernie's not right in a lot of ways, although I one question I have is, how in the heck are we going to afford all these electric cars?
Well, wait a minute. Now you're bringing apples and oranges into the conversation. Let me address that. This is important.
Sure.
There's a vast amounts of money to be invested, available to be invested in what will become, in a capitalist context, a very profitable industry. Electric cars being an example of that. And we also need desperately a better infrastructure for the delivery of electricity through the existing system, and we need to abandon the production of fossil fuel in favor of the use of natural energy sources like wind and water and solar. So all of that is stuff that can make a lot of money in a capitalist context. It's not losing stuff, it's just a big investment.
I personally cannot afford an electric car. I can't.
Well, you can't now because it's an infant industry.
Okay. So the price are going to go down on those?
Oh, yeah. Inevitably, really? As mass production takes over and as simpler, less exotic cars than Teslas become common, yeah, you will be able to afford one. This is not next week, but it's the week after.
And what would you imagine? What would you imagine the price of one of those vehicles?
I can't. Look, I'm not wise enough, nor am I knowledgeable enough to predict what kinds of prices the new electric cars will cost. But I know what the cost of using fossil fuel is. That's something we know.
Yeah.
And it's too high a price in every sense.
Well, a lot of people won't be driving. A lot of poor people. You know, I mean, I can afford to buy a gas-powered car at a very, very—I mean, I'm very savvy about, you know, getting a good price on a vehicle.
Sure.
But I cannot even approach electric vehicle even used at this time. And I think there are a lot of people that are in the same situation.
Well, I think that's probably true. I think that in fact there needs to be a program with economic incentives to encourage this. And in this society, we probably have to have it within the context of capitalism. I don't believe we can turn it around and make it a socialist project.
That's in a way too bad. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it is too bad, deal, but there we are.
In the New Deal, I mean, there were, you know, there maybe so not so much automobile manufacturing, but there was, you know, a lot of infrastructure jobs.
Well, the most important program in a lasting sense was the creation of the hydroelectric system, which incidentally destroyed the fisheries industry in lots of places, including the Pacific Northwest. But it did produce power, and it did produce it at a cost that was affordable to the average farmer or the average laborer or the average worker. And cheap electricity was a key factor in creating the economic revival of the Late Depression and bringing about an ability to fight a world war, you know, unfortunately, a world war.
Right, yeah.
So
well,
I'm
just
not
that
so worried
comment
about that.
Bernie.
Yeah.
I'd vote for him, but it scares me to have him running. I think the overall perception is that he's kind of an edgy character, and I don't think people are listening to the policies so much as looking at the personality.
I can't engage in an argument specifically about Bernie Sanders, except I'm going to have a last word here. I really think the guy is kind of cool. But that's, you know, that's my opinion. I do want to hear from other people, and I don't want us to focus on which of the candidates should be the presidential candidate. I much would prefer to discuss what is needed and how we can have that happen. I also want to hear from you if you totally disagree with me or whatever. 231-8187. Let's go to Arthur. Arthur, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Sure.
You have a very wide-ranging discussion.
Yeah, today. I'm kind of open today.
Yeah, I wrote. I don't want to dwell on the previous caller too much, but I will say that Mr. Sanders in Oklahoma, which is where I moved from Portland to Portland from Oklahoma, Tulsa, mm-hmm. Oklahoma.
You know the history of Tulsa, right?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm well steeped in that history.
Okay.
But Bernie Sanders, my bus, public transport out there is not great, but it's okay, you know?
Uh-huh.
My bus was delayed for like 10 minutes because the crowd to see Bernie Sanders spilled out into the street.
Really?
So, yeah. So that previous caller, you know, the fact that Bernie Sanders seems to be angry, like he said, that's actually very attractive to a lot of young voters, and I'm an old man, and I'm still attracted to that energy that he. But anyway, that's not what I wanted to. I wanted to say a couple other things here.
Sure, go for it.
The hydroelectric. I'm gonna skip what I was gonna actually talk about, but the hydroelectric thing. You're talking about making electricity far, far away. And transporting it over wires to get to people's electric cars, okay?
Well, yeah, sort of. We're simplifying, but yeah.
Yeah, that's called centralization. That's a central power supply, right? But it's much more Greta Thunberg to make electricity for your car by using solar panels.
Well, I agree. I think that would be the ideal sourcing where it's possible, and wind power where that isn't possible.
Yeah. So I think the idea in general of making electricity far away to power what you need to, you know, your vehicle, that's like decrepit. That's old, ancient thinking. You know, I don't think the future is going to hold that. But anyway, let me mention one more item, and then I'll take your comments off the air. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So that was the thing you said about Russian interference in the elections.
Uh-huh.
Okay. My degree. I'm a 53-year-old man. I have a degree in mathematics,
uh-huh.
And I used to study one particular field called number theory.
Yeah, I know number theory. Go ahead.
Number theory is used to crack codes on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Like for instance, you put your PIN number into your credit card, right, to get money. That's what number theory is. It's a very specialized mathematics. And the National Security Agency was hiring more number theorists out of college than anyone else. So don't talk about Russian interference in the election unless you also discuss the National Security Agency that is, looking into everybody's computer and everybody's cell phone. Before you start throwing things towards a foreign power like Russia, I would think you should think more closely about the National Security Agency and Homeland Security that's spying on you night and day. I'm not sure why Russia has nothing to do with this last election. That's all NSA stuff. So,
well, you know, here you and I are going to disagree, I guess.
I'm going to take the comments off air and listen to your response.
Okay, man. Thanks for the call. First of all, there is no question, at least not a question in my mind, that Russia had a role in the election. The only argument remaining is how effective was that? How deep was it? And what do we do about it for future elections? Right now, the Republican Party, a significant party, refuses to acknowledge that and refuses to do anything about it. And as far as I can see, they have an adoration for an authoritarian regime of Vladimir Putin and will do almost anything to remain in power. But I want to be clear about one thing. the Russians did interfere with our election. It is difficult to quantify the effect of that, but we know that it was an effector, and we know that it was a close election, closer than it should have been, in part because of the errors of the Democratic Party in that election. But the fact of the matter is that the Russians were involved, the Russians did take a significant role, and we are yet to find exactly how deep that role was or how maybe it wasn't. So it's not a question of did the Russians interfere, it's a question of to what degree and how effectively did they interfere with our election, and what are we going to do about it for 2020, pardon me. All right, anyway, I want to get some more callers in here. Next caller would 231-8187. The next caller would be Pear, an old friend.
Morning,
hey, Pear.
Joe.
How are you?
Oh, pretty good. You know, maybe if we stopped interfering with Russia, they'll leave us alone.
Too late.
You know, when you look at what we've done to Russia, you know, I mean, what they're doing to us is pretty small potatoes.
Well, you know, I'm not interested. I can't effectively make any equality of that. I think that having, you know, lived long enough to know the attractions of a Soviet-style system versus the disadvantages of it, and some of that becoming more clear to me as I grew up, I'll say, the fact of the matter is that Stalinism stalled socialism in what became the Soviet Union. And that's, you know, that's now indisputable. Yes, Stalin and his cult essentially was a brilliant part of what defeated the Nazis in World War II, but it also led to a kind of state of virtual somnambulism where people's expectations and willingness to struggle was frozen in fear. And I think that has to be acknowledged.
Well, basically, you know, there's lots of things you can wrong with Russia today. I don't think moving troops up to their border is going to help at all.
No, know? I agree with that. I agree with that. Except, here's my personal problem. We should not have, I believe, when the Soviet Union collapsed, created an expansion of NATO and Western power into the borderlands of the Soviet Union. Now, we've done that. And now the question is, what do we do about a fundamental ally that is being effectively dragged back into the what was the Soviet orbit? And I'm talking about Ukraine. This recent building of a bridge that essentially locks ships out of these waters of what is that? My goodness, I can't remember the name of the
Sea of Azov.
Yeah. Essentially blocks that. Essentially puts the Ukraine in a really bad position in terms of shipping, and is designed to reinforce the Russian takeover of the Crimea area. I mean, this is really...
Wait a minute here. You know, for one thing, back in 2014, the U.S. overthrew an elected president of Ukraine, Yanukovych.
Okay.
We overthrew him. We had Victoria Nuland out there in Kiev passing out cookies to these rioters. And he was elected. He may have been corrupt, but he was elected. And then the reason he was elected is because he was supported by the Russian-speaking people of eastern Ukraine. When you look at the map, there's really no reason why Ukraine is even one. It's a divided nation. Well, it hasn't always been a nation anyway, but it is very divided. We overthrew the elected guy, and then his supporters, you know, they got mad and they rebelled. That's what it is. And the Crimea was Russian territory for about 200 or 300 years until Khrushchev gave it to Ukraine for some whimsical reason, you know. I mean, they're very happy. It was a bloodless takeover. It was not an invasion. They voted to rejoin Russia. I mean, what's wrong with that? You know, we break up nations all the time. Look at Kosovo. Look at Yugoslavia. You know, there's such a thing as self-determination.
Okay. I'm not quite sure where you're going. Are you saying essentially that since bad stuff gets done by American foreign policy and bad stuff was done by Soviet policy, we should simply butt out?
Basically, yeah, we should. We got no business over there. We don't. Why are we giving military aid to Ukraine anyway?
Well, I think it's a strategic, logical strategic action. Actually,
It's a bad move. It could lead to war.
It could.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, Trump got in the way for his own personal corrupt reasons, but it's a bad policy in the first place. But the other thing I wanted to say, we're talking before about this country getting started, and you know, the U.S. started with the biggest free lunch in history. When you think of all this free land, all these resources, all this cheap oil, the labor of slaves, you know, we started out with this immense gift from nature itself, and we squandered it. It's gone. You know, we can't. The cheap oil is gone. We can't burn much more oil. It'll kill the climate. So here we are. We're like the prodigal son. He squandered his inheritance, but he doesn't have a big daddy to give him another one, you know. We are back to, we're kind of back to square one, and that is a problem. And, you know, we're not going to have electric planes, for one thing. So you can figure...
Well, we could have what Europe has, which is high-speed rail.
We could do that. I don't think there'll be enough renewable electricity to do everything we want. You know, we may have to give up the video games and... TV might be curtailed, but
I don't see those as energy users to the extent that you're talking about. I really do believe that the advances in the technologies of electricity production will, if we put our mind and energy to it, resolve this particular problem. But
you really think that we can have enough electricity to do all the stuff we do now, all the computers, the clouds, everything, you know, all the...
Well, I got a short answer. Yes.
Wow, I think you're wrong.
Okay.
Well, let me say one more thing. You know, you talk about Russian interference. Have you checked out William Binney yet?
No.
He was the technical director of the NSA. He was with the NSA for 30 years, and he was a whistleblower.
Uh-huh.
And he says, and he gives details, that the DNC material was hacked. And he does this by looking at the time it took to do it. That there was not enough time for this all this stuff to be hacked. It had to be leaked. And he goes into detail. Okay, now you can argue with this guy. You know, he's got a lot of technical expertise. But the thing is, the powers that be have ignored him. They don't try and refute him or dispute him or anything like that. They just ignore him. And to me, that's a fundamental dishonesty of this whole, Russian hacking syndrome.
Well, I'm not quite clear what you're saying. Are you suggesting that the hacking was not real?
Yes.
Oh, well,
might have been some hacking, but the DNC material, and by the way, all that material is true stuff that the people had a right to know. You know, like Hillary's speeches and the way the DNC sabotaged Bernie Sanders' campaign. That is stuff that we ought to be knowing. It's truth. It's not that we've been fed lies. This is true material that was kept hidden from us.
Okay.
And so we have a right to know this stuff.
Yeah,
and
but
so I would just say, check out, when you read William Binney, B-I-N-N-E-Y.
Okay.
And read his stuff and then see if it changes your mind a little bit.
Maybe, but I'm not. I'm pretty much convinced, and there's plenty of evidence for it, that Russia was a major player in the last election, and we have to. More important than that, we have to make sure that outside influence is not present in the election coming up.
Well, we could do less interfering ourselves. Maybe set.
Well, sure. You know, yeah. But here's a problem, purely on a nationalist level, that we need to face. Because if Trump, and I think it's very possible, gets elected a second time, it's going to be much, much worse. This guy's impulses are absolutely the bully man impulses, absolutely a selfish impulse, absolutely reflect the assumptions of power that come out of an inherited wealth. And it's a bad news scenario.
Oh, he is, yes. But the only problem is that if he gets replaced by more warmongers, then I don't know.
There's a lot of bad things that can happen. And the notion of a reformist social democratic system, which also modifies but doesn't necessarily do away with profit making, that kind of possibility has to be acknowledged. But I also think that we live in a kind of luxurious bubble in the midst of what is clearly a crashing society. And I think that one of the most important things to realize is we humans think we're the ultimate alpha thing. But the fact of the matter is that the disappearance of the dinosaurs demonstrates cataclysmic change that could randomly be happening anytime. And the fact is that we mammals are not necessarily the ultimate form of life.
Well, that's true. You know, I read someplace that the human species has been sort of evolutionarily programmed to fill every niche possible, and that's what's going to kill us.
Okay. Anyway, Pear, I'm going to let you go. Give some others an opportunity. Okay.
Have a good day. Have a good holiday.
Yeah. Thank you for the call. Okay. 231-8187. Helen, you're on the air.
Okay. I'm going to just throw a few things out that it has nothing to do with Russia. Les Schwab thinking about selling. I just read that the daughter died of cancer from a long time ago, and the son got killed in a car accident, which is, you know, Les Schwab is like,
Well, they're a big tire dealer. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And out in the country, they fix tires. I mean, in the summertime, there are lots of people getting nails in their tires, and so they just fixed them like, you know, 50 or 100 a day. Okay, second thing is that I listened to the radio this morning, and Alaska Airlines up in Seattle, a large amount of people were sick and couldn't come to work, so many people flew without their baggage to go to the Christmas gathering or whatever. The third thing I want to say is that there's something called the Citizen GoFundMe to say take 3,000 acres somewhere and build a large amount of places for the homeless people to live. They would have a hospital there, and they would have food for everybody. So that's what I have to say.
Okay, thank you for the call, Helen. In terms of the issue of the homeless, there's an odd thing going on in Portland, Oregon. There's an attempt to essentially increase the amount of housing available, but there is no indication that much of that housing would be for poor people. And building housing, good housing, is expensive and is a challenge and would, I think, require a change to kind of a social democratic approach to housing. And we're not seeing that. So there's an oddness, a discontinuity, that we're seeing in what's going on. I think that we have essentially evolved as a nation which has never lost its tendency toward cruelty, that is, the survival of the fittest. And consequently, while we all abhor houselessness, we are, all of us, unable to come up with a system that would create housing for those in need and healthcare for those in need. And until we really begin to face these things, we're not going to really solve these problems. Anyway, I want to hear from more of you. 231-8187. Ron, you're on the air. Ron?
Hey. Yeah. Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
I just wanted to refer to the gentleman that earlier said something about Bernie Sanders. I drive trucks, and I talked to a lot of old white guys right after the election, and almost all of them said they would have voted for Bernie had he run, but there was no way that they were going to vote for Hillary.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
No, seriously, that's very interesting. You're talking about working class folks.
Exactly. And none of them none of them really wanted Bernie. I mean, Trump. You know, we kind of forced the Democratic Party got played because the Republicans knew that, or were pretty sure that the Democrats were going to run Hillary, and Hillary was hated. They have been hated. Clintons have been hated by the Republicans. Excuse me.
Well, yeah, the Republicans did almost everything they did anything they could to make the Clintons the enemy.
Well, the Clintons made themselves were looked at as the enemy because when the Clintons were in the White House, I mean the Arkansas governor's mansion, and Whitewater happened. They looked at the Clintons as not Whitewater. What was that big?
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, really, I can't remember.
Well, they looked at the Clintons as ripping off, you know, a whole lot of poor folks in Arkansas, and they were hated after that. In 98, that was the big thing, talking on CB radio. That was the big thing that they were talking about.
I'm sort of suspicious of all that. I actually think it was kind of a very clever way of discrediting them. I don't think, and I want to be clear about this, I don't think that either Clinton was would be a great leader. I don't think that that the very affable President Clinton was the right person for the office. And I've always felt that our two political parties are not two sides of some kind of political and economic coin. I don't think the Democrats are the equivalent of the Republicans in the sense that the Republicans really are the party of the ruling class, and they really are exploiting the ignorance of a poorly educated nation. On the other hand, the Democrats have never resolved, since Roosevelt, really, the contradictions between their social democratic impulses and the ideas of a kind of revanchist capitalism. Anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to say
no,
that.
No, I think what you're saying is very useful. I think it's a good perception. I don't know how universal it is, but I do feel that there were two factors about Hillary that made her, well, three, that made her not easily likable. First of all, she's awkward. It has nothing to do with her politics. It has to do with her style, personal style. She is awkward, and she played the awkward role in public, and that was unfortunate. The second thing is, hey, we still have a very reactionary attitude toward the idea of a woman being president of the United States, and I think that was a factor, a major factor. And thirdly, the failure of the Democrats to be clearly in the corner of social democracy, as would have been Bernie, really did set up a situation where it was difficult to be sure that Hillary, who logically, remember, she got the majority of the vote, should have won. And more significantly, I really do believe that Russian intervention was a major factor in the election. And I'm going to watch that one play out. Hopefully it will. But I think what you pointed out is important. This sense of something wrong, which I don't see, but something wrong about the Clintons. So, you know, that's a good point, man.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the call. 231-8187. I'm looking to hear from all of you. I'm kind of running out of time, but let's go quickly to George. You're on the air.
Yes, I want to amplify the comment about the difficult homeless situation in Portland and underscore the hard-pressed private sector Oregon taxpayer who has to pay every month for your two added sweeteners to your premium Tier 1 PERS. And I think you should offer a free Christmas dinner on Bryant and East 9th to every homeless person listening to this broadcast.
Well, we don't have the money to do that, but I appreciate the idea. And I'm going to have to end the show, and I'm going to have to wish you all, ironically, a happy holiday. I won't say Merry Christmas, because after all, it is coming on Kwanzaa, coming on Hanukkah, and coming on Christmas. And you all have a good time. Eat your turkey or whatever, and if you got an extra turkey, share it with the poor. I'll see you all later.
it's coming through a hole in the air from those Nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, we feature a February speech by Native American author and activist Winona LaDuke. At 10 on Flashpoints, we hear about the new bipartisan Space Force bringing war to space. Then at 11 at Stage and Studio, discussing the mystery of Opal Whiteley, a half-hour documentary on a young woman from Cottage Grove who became the center of an international controversy. And at 11:30, an archived episode of Art Focus, where host Joseph Galavan interviews M.K. Guth, the director of the Hallie Ford School of Graduate Studies at the Pacific Northwest College of Art. KBOO is an independent, non-commercial, community radio station powered by our volunteers and our members. By making a donation through the Give Guide on kboo.fm/give, you're eligible for more than $4,000 of free and discounted products from your favorite Portland brands, and you're supporting your community radio station. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle, every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KBOO Community Radio.
One of the great challenges in helping local folks who are homeless, they may be camping out, living in a car, sleeping on a friend's couch, or some other transient arrangement, is to make regular contact with them. In episode 3 of Local Folks Podcast, Helping the Homeless, Alita, the president of the Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center, talks about how they reach out to the homeless to provide needed services. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folks.
A lot of these frontline environmental battles are indigenous environmental battles. And, you know, renewable energy, we don't want to be the last people to get that.